Philip Morgan.
Listen with a real. How are you, my man?
I am good, my friend. I was driving to Yosemite with my in-laws in a car full of people, and my wife made her bike honking sounds, like the horn of a bike. And what, I said,
"Wait, why did she do that? Let me stop you right there. What occasioned that sound effect? Does she just like insert side sound effects to, does she kind of create a soundtrack for whatever's happening?"
I would not describe my wife that way. No.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the context was exactly, but I think it was something like, "Oh, I can do a bike horn sound." And she did it, and everybody was like so amused because it's really good. And I then told them, you know, in the theme music for my podcast with the one and only Philip Morgan, I sampled my wife doing that sound, and that's what you hear in the opening. And I played it for them, and they were just like over the moon happy about that. They thought it was the best.
That's awesome. So, who's that character in Police Academy that was always making the sound effects? So she's not like that, right?
No.
Okay, okay. Michael Winslow is the actor. I can't remember the what was the character's name though.
Well, you're really dating yourself here, buddy.
I don't mind. Yeah.
I don't remember the character's name, but I definitely remember all of the sound effects that he did. And they were very good.
Yeah, he was pretty good. That's awesome. Well, hopefully I'll get to experience that myself someday, because I do remember that when you put together the theme music, I was like, how did you do that? And you're like, oh, I sampled my wife making a bicycle horn sound.
Of course. Great. And you were like, oh, yeah, head slapper, so obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, Philip, so today we're going to go meta on that ass for everybody listening. And what we're going to talk about is whether or not you, dear listener, should create a podcast. And I think our advice may be so nuanced as to possibly be confusing. So with that, Philip, do you have thoughts on this?
You should not. Next question. How is that for nuance? Unless you should.
Perfect.
You should not unless you should.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Well, some years ago, I probably would have almost universally answered that question with, of course you should. It's this underutilized channel. It has this incredible ability to build trust because of some weird effect that listening to your voice has. It, you know, it's so easy to get listeners. You know, it's just this kind of blue sky, open territory sort of a situation. Why not? And, you know, the effort can be so low. You just get a friend like Liston Witherill and you just talk about whatever comes to mind and you record it. Like, so
that turned out to be a terrible idea for us, by the way.
So that would have been the essence of the reason why I would say, yeah, sure, you should do that. And again, that would have been a number of years ago. And now the answer that I give is not an automatic yes. It's much more like, well, let's talk about that some. What I've seen is, so let me say this, and then I want to hear your thoughts on it. When I launched the Consulting Pipeline podcast, I could look at the date when that was, but you know, it was, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. In the first week or so, just followed the playbook that I was pointed to on launching a podcast. And I was in New and Noteworthy, not for like a super, like a third layer down category, but for all of, I think, what was it, like business and consulting or business and marketing. It was like just one level down from a top level category. So it wasn't across all of the iTunes podcast store, but it was one level down, but still it was like a big category. And I got into New and Noteworthy for that category. Yeah. And I'm not saying the podcast wasn't good. I thought it was. And I launched, you know, the playbook back then was launch with 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah, right.
You know, get all your friends to give it a 5-star rating and leave some reviews. And, you know, unlike other systems, there's not any real sophisticated algorithm to make sure that you're not, you know, gaming the system. And so it worked. It worked like I was surprised. It worked like it was supposed to. I was in New Noteworthy. I, you know, got a bunch of downloads and it was like off to the races. And that same playbook does not work the same way anymore. I can tell you that for sure.
Well, and we can say from our experience with the offline podcast, that formula did not work.
Oh, yeah.
Not that we spent any time promoting this ever. But yeah, no, it's not like we're seeing rapid growth of our listener base.
Yeah. I helped my wife start a podcast that she runs using the same playbook. I don't know, maybe a year after the Consulting Pipeline podcast, I started that and it just didn't work at all. And then I found something that said, oh, you have, if you want to be a New Noteworthy, you have to submit your podcast and, you know, a group of panel of editors or whatever are going to review it. And so obviously that's a response to a system that's easy to game. And that's always going to be the case. You know, it's easy to get on LinkedIn's newsfeed. Watch out. That's going to change. You know, like that's just part of the game. So that changed and I started to feel like I was giving bad advice. And then I just kind of changed my attitude more towards a go deep rather than wide sort of approach. And so anyway, all of that has gotten me giving a different answer to that question. What about you? Like if somebody asks you that question, listen, should I start a podcast? What do you think I'd say?
Well, I'd definitely ask, why do you want to start a podcast, first of all?
You're so good at that. Those kind of questions, yeah.
Because I think the goal that you're trying to achieve really matters. So, you know, I think for you and I, Philip, actually, let's talk about this for a second. This is interesting. Let's go full meta here.
Yeah.
Why do we keep doing this? So one of the reasons, I'd say the leading reason I keep doing this is I love talking to you.
Yeah.
And this gives us a nice sort of disguised as business excuse to catch up and talk business things. And so I love that. I also think that this podcast for me helps me work out ideas and you and I can have a dialogue about how we see things sort of in the context of a way that would be helpful for someone else, but also we can vet our own ideas through this podcast. What's not on the list of reasons why I continue to do this podcast is to, you know, be world famous or to develop a huge line of leads. I'm doing other things in order to do that. So what, I guess I'm wondering, why do you do offline?
Oh, just out of a sense of obligation. No, I'm kidding. it's actually pretty much the same reasons. Our listeners may not know that, you know, before we started this podcast, you and I would meet once a month on Skype just to catch up. And I think we both felt like that was great and also not enough time. So it wasn't like we carefully planned some evolution of our once a month meetings to this podcast, but you suggested it. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds like I'll get more of what I like, which is chatting with Listen. So let's try it. And, you know, I think we must both get enough out of it that it survived a format change. And I think it's also outlasted the point at which entropy tends to take over for ventures that are done for the wrong reasons. So anyway, it's pretty much the same reasons you gave. We sort of do it for fun, but you know, it's fun to talk to you. It's fun to bounce around ideas and it's fun to try to figure out ways to disagree with you and end up mostly realizing that we see things kind of the same way.
We made this boring podcast with no controversy.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. So back to your question. Your question was, what would I say to someone if they asked, should I do a podcast?
Yeah.
And obviously I want to know, well, what are you trying to get out of it? And so maybe it's also helpful to think about the different uses I could see of a podcast. So I think if you're really trying to grow your brand in the true brand building sense of like, I just need more people to be exposed to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great distribution channel to do that. I don't want you to think, however, build it and they will come. You need a way to send people to your podcast. Philip, exactly what you were saying, like the idea that you can just hit publish without any attention towards SEO or, you know, manually sending traffic to your podcast. I think it's unlikely. So for instance, I'm getting ready to launch the Listen.io show, and I have, I think, like 14 or 16 episodes done. I'm going to launch with five. I'm going to go around to software companies and collect giveaways that I can use to incentivize people to subscribe to and like the show and leave reviews. I'm going to be manually be reaching out to people. I'm going to be promoting it through my LinkedIn channel. I'm going to be promoting it through my email. Like, there's going to be all of this promotional activity that goes into me even having a shot at getting some early traction on it.
Yeah.
So there, if you're looking to build brand, I think the way to look at a podcast is it's just another distribution channel. And if you're good at audio and you're interesting and you're well-spoken, maybe this would be a good place for you. I think another thing that you can look at is it could be good for lead gen and especially lead nurturing. Mm-hmm. However, again, if you don't have guests, it's hard to grow your podcast. So one thing I tell all of our listeners is, you know, a problem that is built into the structure of this podcast, given the time that we launched it, is we don't have any guests. Mm-hmm. And if you have guests, you have natural promoters who extend your reach outside of your network. Yeah. And because we don't have that, you know, lo and behold, it's exactly what I would have expected. Our podcast grows a little bit slower than I would have expected. So lead gen is a possibility. It's just, you really don't have much control over how the lead gen goes or how fast.
Yeah.
I would say for the interview shows, even if no one listens to your podcast, if you're trying to create leads either by interviewing people and starting a relationship that way, or creating partnerships with people who you otherwise couldn't access, but now you have something to offer them, that's another great use of a podcast. If you want to talk to thought leaders, if you want to, you know, talk to influencers in other spheres, your podcast gives you an excuse to contact people and give them something, which is a little bit of promotion.
Yeah.
So I think those are the reasons I would start it. But if you're like, oh, I just need, like, I'm not generating any leads right now, and therefore I'm going to create a podcast so that I can, like, have this huge influx of leads, my advice to you definitively would be, please don't do this.
Yeah, right. Or do it with appropriately low expectations, or, but probably don't do it because,
well, here's the thing.
If you have limited time and energy, yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to cut you off right there. And the reason is, if you're not capable of generating any leads right now, by creating a podcast, what you're doing is creating a new distribution channel that you need to drive traffic to. And you've already proven that that's a challenge in the first place.
Right.
Because you don't have any leads coming in.
Right. You're playing on the maybe the hardest mode, or, you know, you're upping the difficulty level.
Yeah. In other words, like, a precursor of generating leads through a podcast is generating traffic. And if you're not generating traffic in other ways and you don't know how to do that, the podcast isn't going to solve the problem for you.
Yeah. Right.
It's just going to create a new problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, podcasting is interesting. If we can talk about some of the characteristics of podcasting for a minute, it's interesting because it has few intermediaries, not none, but few. It's like a remnant of the old web, where all you needed was, you know, a point of view, the ability to write, and an RSS feed, and you could collect an audience very easily. Right. And I'm not saying it's easy to collect an audience on podcasting, but a lot of that other stuff is true. You're not to the, if you compare it to something like LinkedIn or Facebook, you know, all of those kind of where your expense is your time and energy, but not actual money out of pocket. Uh-huh. Podcasting still has some of those attributes of the old internet and that's my term for, you know, before Facebook gobbled up so much mind share and, you know, you could actually run a business based on a blog and an RSS feed before you really absolutely had to collect email addresses. Like before all that stuff, it's the old internet. And podcasting still has some of those characteristics. I mean, it still works on RSS. It still has very few intermediaries. And it, I mean, some of those qualities are amazing if you know how to use them. But there's a learning curve at least, or there's the requirement that you actually know how to use those attributes of podcasting for it to be an effective tool for you. And like you said, it's not a standalone thing. It's a distribution channel for content that's either compelling or not, content that's either going to, you know, sort of earn its way into people's mind and their schedule or not. It's going to spread pseudo-virally or not. You know, all those things aren't automatically true just because you chose podcasting as a distribution channel.
Right.
So, you know, the medium is interesting and it doesn't solve problems, but if it combines with something you're naturally good at, I think it does. There is a sort of amplification. If voice is a really effective way for you to connect with people, then podcasting and perhaps video is something you should be looking at before you consider other options. But you still have to solve the same problems you're talking about, you know, generating interest, generating traffic, and having content that's worth that traffic's attention.
Yeah. So, you know, we did record that lead gen episode recently. I forget exactly which episode it was. I don't have it up right now, but recently, if you go back a few episodes, you can hear us talking about what leads to decay of different lead gen channels.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think when I think about podcasting, when it comes to generating interest in your business and in generating brand awareness, I see really two schools of thought on this, right? Mm-hmm. And they're complete opposites. Mm-hmm. So I've heard Blair N say, you should have one primary way of generating leads and a backup.
Right.
And then on the complete other end of the spectrum, you've got Gary V saying, wherever your market is, be there, right? You should be on Facebook. You should be on Instagram. You should be on, like, on and on, wherever your market is. Now, I think both are, I think Blair meant his advice literally. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for him, obviously, but that was my read. Mm-hmm. And I think Gary Vaynerchuk means his advice figuratively. Mm. Basically, he's saying, insofar as you can manage it, you should be as many places as people can discover you. Mm. Now, here's the thing that I think, the more I do this, the latter seems to be working better for my business mm-hmm. than the former.
Yeah, right.
And the reason for that is the way people consume content, as you were alluding to, Philip, changes over time. Right. And so the big problem with the internet, and I think one reason why social networks are so important and why Google is so important, is you have too much information. And so now we got to curate it. We have to have a way of sorting through all of it. Podcasts are going the same way. Here's what you're seeing. You're seeing companies now, professional podcasting media companies like Gimlet, mm-hmm. who I'm a huge fan of, mm-hmm. but they're going out and curating and cross-promoting all of their shows, right? So you're competing in that landscape now, and it changes. The one thing that I love about podcasting, which we didn't cover earlier when I was talking about all the benefits, is there is a huge consumption benefit of podcasting, which is people could be doing anything else pretty much while they're listening to the podcast. In fact, I would guess right now, dear listener, you're walking, you're commuting, you're doing chores, you're around your house, you're doing something else in addition to listening. So this is a medium that allows me to be in your ear right now while you're not fully engaged with the content. You're actually doing something else. It's part of a multitasking kind of a thing. And so, you know, that's one really powerful thing about audio, is that people could be doing lots of other things and still be listening. And I would say, because of that, you may actually be more likely to engage with maybe even a higher end audience, more decision makers, because they tend to multitask more.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that in my list of attributes of the medium, but you're right. Just the day before yesterday, I was down in San Rafael and had lunch with a client of mine, and he was giving me some very good feedback on the Consulting Pipeline podcast. And one of the things I asked him, because I always like the opportunity to learn about what people, you know, how do they interact with the content that I'm producing? And it's always like for him with podcasts, not just mine, but others, you know, it's like while he's doing something else, you know, while he's commuting to work or walking the dog or whatever. And I think that's a very common pattern. I think about the fact that I often hear people talk about binging on podcasts, you know, the same way they might binge on a season of Netflix shows or whatever.
Yep.
And that's also different than I think you're going to find with text. I have talked to a few people via email who are on my email list, and they say something to the effect of, I love your emails. Don't read them every day. I send them to a folder, and I binge read them. But that seems less common with the text or the written word, and more common with podcasts, where you've sort of got this app, you know, the podcast player, that can easily do that for you. You can say, you know, you go back to an old podcast and have it sort in a certain order and just hit play, and it's going to play all the podcasts, you know, all the episodes on that podcast in chronological order of when they were released, or reverse chronological order or whatever. And it's just very suitable to kind of, I don't want to say mindlessly consuming, but just kind of, you know, drip, drip, drip. And either a binge thing, or some people will just, you know, if you're good about publishing on a regular schedule, they start to organize their life around it. And when that happens, that is a whole different level of fandom. You know, because that's the type of fandom that's reserved for great television, you know, sports events, national fucking holidays. You know, people, like, if somebody is organizing their life around your thing, that is a level of connection that is quite intense, I think.
Well, and you know, I find that, like, I'm looking for the right mix of channels, and I think podcasts are crucial for me personally. And the more it can feel like someone's there with me, I think the better.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I have a confession to make, Philip. So I've been working with our friend Josh, who is very good at SEO and has built a lot of traffic to a site. And, you know, I'm investing not as much time in writing on my site as I did earlier in the year, but I still publish a daily blog, which does virtually nothing for my SEO reach. But you know, the more I do that, the more I feel like people don't get a sense of me, the person, as much as if they were to interact with video, even short videos that I publish on LinkedIn, or on YouTube, or these podcasts, right? The feedback that I get is overwhelmingly most strong from not the written stuff, but from the video and the podcasts.
Right.
And I think the reason for that is, it sort of tricks us as human beings, not to say that, like, you and I are tricking anybody right now, just we get the sense as the listener, like, oh, I know that person, or I know what it must be like to know them.
Yeah.
And that's powerful.
Yeah. I invented a word for that, asymmetrical vulnerability. So here you and I are being, you know, somewhat vulnerable.
Right.
Whoever is listening to this, there's zero vulnerability echoed back to us. And I feel like the first move in building trust is often, you know, you make the first move. You're like, okay, you know, we have no reason to trust each other, but I'm going to assume that we do. So I'm going to express some vulnerability as a way to jumpstart trust building. Right. Well, that's kind of what you and I are doing here, or anybody who uses podcasting in that way. So I've seen that too. Here's the thing I wanted to mention. So I might be underestimating surface area or the footprint of the content that I've created, but part of the reason I have a slightly different viewpoint than you do about going wide versus deep, and I think that's a good way to characterize, you know, what you said. Blair Enns is talking about, he's advocating going deep, you know, pick a primary and a secondary lead gen approach. This is something he said. He did a webinar at the end of 2017 that was sort of like, let me get you fired up for 2018 in accordance with the win without pitching philosophy, right? So that's where I heard that anyway. He advocates going deep and focused in your lead gen, and you're saying Gary Vee, who I mostly ignore, advocates going wide. So let's call it just wide versus deep. I feel like I've gone deep. You know, I've had the Consulting Pipeline podcast. I've guested on about 30 podcasts. I think it's 30, 35, somewhere around there, which to me is not a different, it is technically a different lead gen channel because it's somebody else's show, but it is so similar to what I'm already doing with hosting the Consulting Pipeline podcast that it doesn't feel like a whole different thing, right? It uses this, basically the same skill set, uses the same equipment. So I consider it essentially the same channel. And mm-hmm. I've had my email list. I have had a few guest posts on a few select kind of partner things. I have my book, you know, I have my own website. I'm trying to think what else I've done. And I've sort of been involved at certain points in communities that contain my clients or my prospective clients, and I've sort of over-participated there. And I think that's pretty much, but the thing I've focused on the most is podcasting and my email list. And about 6 months ago, people who've been, you know, tuned in to me for a while, not everybody, but some people started saying, dude, I see you everywhere. People like mention you in Slack channels that I'm in that you're not in. And I was on a Win Without Pitching webinar as just listening in. It was every year Blair does a sort of sales webinar for the Win Without Pitching program. And I just wanted to see how he approached that and learn from it. So I registered for the webinar and saw in the chat someone mentioned me. Someone fucking name checked me in the chat on, you know, Blair Enns's webinar and said, you should check out this guy's stuff if you're having problems with positioning or you need help with that. So to me, none of that being everywhere was something that I went deep and I still ended up going wide. And I'm curious, what do you make of that?
Well, so I disagree with your analogy.
Okay.
So let me just challenge that. So I wouldn't characterize it as going deep versus going wide.
Okay.
I would characterize it as, so for instance, right? The lead gen work that I do in a single channel is probably more than most business owners do in a whole year. And what I'm saying is I believe that more awareness is good, right? Period. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the problem with only picking one or two channels is unless you're a hit in those places, and most of us, you know, are more likely to get base hits rather than home runs. Mm-hmm. So unless you're a home run in your primary channel, it's probably not going to be enough, and it's going to take some time to learn. I also think the problem with that is you don't get the benefit of experimentation. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning of the year, my hypothesis was I'll be doing all these blogs and writing long form, and that'll be great. And what I quickly realized as I started doing video is, holy crap, I'm pretty good at this. Yeah. And actually, it's amazing how much has changed in 5 months of doing video. Like, I look at the videos now versus the videos when I started, and they're just so much better now for various reasons.
Nice.
But I also had the benefit of trying a bunch of different things and realizing, like, oh, this one thing that I didn't put much stock in at the beginning of the year, it actually turns out to be the most important thing I'm doing. And so, you know, certainly over time, I'm at a point where you say I'm going deep. I would say I'm doing more awareness building, but I'm at a point where I start to look around and go, okay, what am I really good at? And let me double down on some of that and cut out other things, to the point where I'm even wondering, should I be writing long form blog posts at all?
Right, right.
I'm not ready to completely push those out, but my feeling is, in order to get to the point where you can even make an educated guess about your one or two channels, I really think you need to try a bunch of different things. And also, I do think that if you're getting no leads now, to get the flywheel going, you should create the illusion that you're everywhere immediately, because that's going to be the way to really get leads coming in the door.
Mm. So I'm still confused about, like, why is wide versus deep for you not a good suitable way to think about this? Why is it not the best analogy for that?
Well, Philip, I said in the beginning this podcast was going to be confusing because we're going to tell people not to create a podcast unless they should. so this shouldn't come as any surprise. Why do I take issue with wide versus deep?
Yeah,
I think because it implies depth implies developing expertise in something.
Uh-huh.
And wide implies being a generalist and only average at a bunch of things. And I don't agree with that, right?
Okay.
So I don't agree with that characterization of having multiple channels to hit. Why are we talking about lead generation again? Didn't we just do this?
Well, why? I mean, it gets back to your why question. Like, why would you? Why are you doing the podcast? I think some people are maybe going to do it for fun like we do, but the rest are probably thinking it has some kind of business value, some sort of lead generation value. So I think that's why we're getting back to lead generation.
Okay. I'll be a good sport. So yeah, I mean, I think that's why I take issue with it, is because what I'm saying is take your message into multiple mediums and formats, and then see what sticks.
Okay.
And rather than, you know, the problem that one big discouraging thing that I see some people encounter is they go, okay, I'm going to choose one channel. I'm just going to write blogs.
Uh-huh.
Right. And that, I would say that's sort of the de facto channel for most people. And it gets discouraging because if there's anything harder than a podcast, it's gotta be blogs, to stand out. I mean, there's just so many of them. It's hard to rank for traffic if you don't already have a backlink profile. You need to know something about SEO and how the search algorithm works, on and on and on. And so I would say try some things. I also think the idea of only pushing content is a bad one when it comes to lead generation. I think there's got to be some interaction to do it successfully.
Mm-hmm.
It right now, because of the way things have changed, and I think there's a greater expectation that you'll be available in some setting and show up. And I think that that's the fastest way to build a relationship. So that's why I take issue with your wide versus deep analogy. Does that clear it up?
Yeah. So I hear you saying it has these unwanted implications about maybe the quality of the content.
Let's, if we can stay on the this versus that template, I wouldn't say wide versus deep. I'd say more versus less.
More channels versus fewer channels, to be clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so and even volume of content. And I would err on the side of more.
Okay. And you see that as, and this is, feels like almost a deja vu, but more as like an experimentation thing or a continuous experimentation thing. But over time, the volume stays relatively high. It just, where it shows up in terms of what channels it shows up in, changes over time based on what you learn.
Yes. And I mean, again, let's go back to our standard answer for every question we ever get, which is it depends.
Oh, I thought so, it was ask Liston. Anyway, go ahead.
No, that's definitely not it. I don't think people are ever thinking that.
Do what Liston does.
No, I wouldn't recommend that either. But if you're trying to create, like I've been speaking of binge listening, so the one that I'm listening to now is called, and I want to make sure I get this right, this is my latest binging podcast. It is Choiceology with Dan Heath by Charles Schwab. And I'm a big fan of the Heath Brothers books.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of all behavioral economics and sort of, you know, choice architecture and It's awesome, right?
Yeah.
But it's a very high production endeavor.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously he has a budget. He has producers. He has assistants.
Yeah.
He has dedicated research people. He has editors. He has music people. They do Foley sound effects, like on and on and on, right? Wow. It's like a really great and engaging podcast. Well, if you want to go to that level of quality, first of all, you probably can't without a staff. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to go to that level of quality, then maybe you just say, hey, I'm going to throw everything at podcasting. But that's not what I hear most people doing. I hear most people doing this, where your time to produce an episode is basically the duration of your recording time, maybe some short editing and mastering time, and then you publish and that's it.
Basically live to tape, yeah.
Right. So it's like 1 to 2 hours for every hour of airtime.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's going to be your strategy, I don't think that's going to be sufficient on its own. That's my advice, unless you're latching on to some new trend that's going to give you some search engine juice. So if a year ago you did a blockchain podcast, you'd be in a pretty good position right now. Yeah. But if you started a year from now, no one gives a shit.
Yeah, right.
Are you all talked out, Philip?
Maybe.
I'm going to sit here and wait until you decide.
Do, 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 do. Yeah, you know, I think we've touched on some of the major issues. And I think the fact that there's no clear conclusion or like obvious answer is exactly right. These are not simple nuance. They're simple, you know, kind of binary questions. They're more nuance. They're more... and really, I think you said maybe the most important thing in this episode when you said, why do you want to do a podcast? Because that has so much to do with the answer as to whether you should or should not do a podcast. Or I hate that word should, whether it would even be worth your while to try. And hopefully this doesn't sound too gloomy or pessimistic, because I think that even in highly saturated media channels, there's a ton of opportunity to you know, do good lead generation or whatever your goal is to accomplish that goal. You know, it's not like because there's 1,000 channels on cable TV that people should stop producing good, you know, television content. Good TV shows come out every year. So I just use that as an analogy for how you can succeed even in a crowded place. But it raises the stakes. And I think a lot of my kind of automatic, yes, you should do a podcast advice in the past was because it was a not crowded channel. And that has for sure changed.
Yeah. And I think the template that I would give people, since I'd really like to move past our, it depends advice. The template that I would give you is to think about, what those goals are. And so the goals that I mentioned in throughout this episode were, connecting with new people, thought leaders, partners, potentially, you know, valuable relationships that you'd like to start. Podcast is great for that if you're going to do interviews. Brand awareness, with the expectation that you're also going to have to manually build traffic and give people reasons and sort of cross promote in different channels that hopefully you already own. And maybe there's some lead generation and some promotional aspects, but I would say that's, for me, lower on the list in most cases. It's really more of a branding and partnership exercise more than anything. So if that sounds good to you, maybe you should consider this. If that doesn't sound good to you, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah. And that's so funny because those things I think have been the opposite, or the things that have not, that I've not done with the Consulting Pipeline podcast. I've like, it found it a pretty decent lead gen channel. And, you know, it's, so there's a lot you can do with podcasting. I'm not saying you're wrong at all. I'm saying it's largely about what you want to do with it.
Well, and the intentionality, right? Like having a clear, if your goal was to generate leads, you're more likely to generate leads.
Right. Yeah. A clear reason why are you doing this?
I mean, I think it was like episode 40 that we started promoting things on this podcast. I think I said to you, hey, it might be a good idea for us to like tell people there are ways to work with us.
Speaking of which, we didn't do that on this episode. You got something you want to promote, Liston?
Oh, you picked up the bait on that one. I'm joking.
My sense of smell is strong. Go ahead.
There is something I want to promote. No, I actually wasn't goading you to prompt me. But there is something I want to promote, and that is Consulting Sales Bootcamp. So I put together a training program, and it's designed to help you never drop a lead again, always know what to do next in your sales process, and be able to train other people who you work with now or in the future on how to sell whatever services it is that you sell. It's written exclusively for consultants, sales training for consultants. And the way it's very different is, unlike other online courses, I expect a huge commitment from you. And the reason I do that is I want everybody who becomes part of the course to succeed. And I know the only way to do that is for you to show up over and over again for 8 weeks, do the work, and therefore earn the transformation that will come out of it. So if you're interested in that, just go to my website, liston.io. There's a short video that can walk you through it. And enrollment is open now.
Nice. You know, I want to promote something that's not my own service. You reminded me of this episode of the Farnham Street podcast that I recently listened to. It was an interview with this guy, Dan Ariely. Have you heard of him?
Oh, yes. He wrote one of the most impactful books I've ever read on me.
So I'm dropping this right now into Skype so that you can include this listed in the show notes. It's episode 33 of the Knowledge Project podcast, and the title is Irrationality, Bad Decisions, and the Truth About Lies. My conversation with Dan Ariely, it was really fascinating. Just the kind of thing that I wanted to listen to more than once. So, you talked about stuff like behavioral economics and choice architecture and so forth, and this podcast is a conversation about that with all kinds of really fascinating tie-ins to real-world decision-making and really ordinary stuff that we all face. It's not – I mean, the guy's an academic, but the implications of his work are very real-world. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, and his first book, Predictably Irrational, mm-hmm. was my initial exposure to this world. It was sort of a popular book written mm-hmm. about some of the experiments he did, and I just – when I read it, I was like, this is amazing. I have to like incorporate this into what I do.
Very cool.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Does that have sales implications as well?
His work?
I'm sure it must.
Oh, for sure it does.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. In one of them, he was basically tasting. That was a Freudian slip. He was testing the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. And so what he did was he did a big, urn of coffee, created a big urn of coffee, and he sold it on campus. He's a professor at Duke University. Mm-hmm. And there were two groups that were selling the coffee. In one, or there were two types of coffee. They would package it with like sort of in a rugged, not fancy way. And then another one, it would be on like a silver platter with like a jar of sugar that was all nice. Right. And he'd have people try each coffee and then rate the quality of the coffee.
on factors like taste and stuff like that, or just...
Right, and like how much would you pay for it?
Okay, yeah.
Universally, like the placebo effect was real, right? People like the better packaging. And, you can like... there's proof of this in the real world. It's called Starbucks, because before that, no one ever would have paid $2.50 for a cup of drip coffee. Yeah. If you think about how that applies to your sale, like the factors and the way you present yourself really matters.
Yeah.
There are tons of implications.
Awesome talking to you, buddy.
Good to talk to you too, Philip.
Bye.
Bye.